That's what we're doing this
morning. Anyhow, they put me down. He says, we need jokes here in this paper. So I went to the files. They had files of newspapers and everything. And while I was there, people came up which were world famous in the, among Jews, of Rome raising, you know, and Nochem Yud, people who, you know. And then there was advertising that had to be translated from Yiddish, from English into Yiddish paper, and they gave it to me. So I became almost an assistant editor.
So you built yourself up that way.
Well, I was only a boy, maybe 16, 17,
yeah.
13. And then they put my name down as business manager. But the thing went out of business. So I went next door, they had the Jewish Morning Journal. Real Orthodox paper, like the Tagavot. And I went there and I got a job. I think it was $12 a week.
So you left the first job and that was...
The first job went out of business.
I see.
And that was my life experience. Every paper I worked for went out of business. Because the day of the newspapers, there used to be 7, 8, 9 papers a day in a town. Today, too many.
Right. Were those Yiddish papers or American?
Yiddish and English. Yiddish had 5 dailies in the Forwards. It's the only one that exists, and it's a weekly. They used to have the Talk, they used to have the Morning Journal, they used to have the Tagavot, they used to have the War. Daily papers, the Forward had a circulation of 262,000. It was printed in 3 different cities. Today, they don't even have 15,000 readers. And they issue all in English now, no Yiddish. But that's the Bindle belief and all those stories. Anyhow, I became a newspaper man there from one to the other. And then I got a job with a Jewish magazine from, I didn't want to stay there because there wasn't enough money in everything. A Jewish magazine.
So from this age on, like you were already 13, 14, you were living on your own?
Oh, my
doing own. Your own meals, your
own
laundry?
$10 a month I paid for a room in an elevator apartment in New York. And I used to mark down how much my breakfast cost, 12 cents, my dinner. I used to go into a restaurant on 2nd Avenue and I wasn't making any money.
You weren't going to school either, then.
Huh?
You weren't in school.
No.
No.
No, I graduated night high school in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did finish, before you left, you finished night high school.
Yeah, I came back to Boston later on. Wait a minute. I'm not prepared for all this. I just want to tell you what happened about this business of living alone.
Okay.
I lived on Clinton Street, you know, the east side, and we used to go to, I liked Jewish food. I can't eat anything else except Jewish style food to this day. So there was a restaurant, Rappaport's, I believe, on 2nd Avenue in New York, and they had on the table, they used to have a big 1 or 2 basket full of all kinds of bread and all kinds of rolls. Maybe you saw it in your day too in a Jewish restaurant. You did.
Oh, when you walk in? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when you order. So
right.
I used to order a plate of soup and then eat up about 10, 15 rolls. I didn't put any in my pocket, but I stuffed myself up. The plate of soup maybe was 15 cents and the rolls were free. And that's the way it was.
Right.
But tips, you see. So I figured the waiter is working and he's getting a salary. I was broke. So one day, 2 days, I came there and I ate there and I didn't leave the waiter a tip. So the next time I came, I ordered soup and I waited 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, no soup. So I began to think, why is there no soup? And I recalled that the waiter hollered to the kitchen, soup can wait, can warten bis morgen, can wait till tomorrow. Because I didn't think. I'm not joking, I'm telling you the truth.
That's funny.
So
he waited on me because I didn't think.
Did you eventually get your soup?
I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm. He didn't starve.
You lived alone and you used to eat out.
So I lived alone, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when the job in the paper folded up too. The Jewish Morning Journal used to be a terrific newspaper in New York for wanted ads.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have 3-4 pages of wanted ads. They tell the industry, the clothing industry, that was big. They needed operators, and they came to the Jewish Morning Journal. I used to write the ads.
I see.
A man wanted a woman to sew. He's up there, fill a vibe. I had to write it up for them. Uh-huh. Anyhow, I went on the road to get subscriptions for a Jewish comic magazine called the Kundas. And that magazine is something like Life, like in the New Yorker or something.
Uh-huh.
It was full of funny things. And I went to Connecticut and I went to different places.
Oh, outside of New York.
And they printed my picture every week in there that I'm going to be in this and this town and all that happened. Well, one day I get a call from my brother Isaac. He was a correspondent for the Hearst newspapers. And I must have been, 17, 18, I don't know. And I get a call from him and he says to me, "What are you doing?" I told him. He says, "How would you like to get a job in an English newspaper?" Well, for me it was like paradise, you know, to go from the years. So I came back to, I was in Pittsville, Mass. Anyhow, I came back and he says, "You go down and see this and this man in New York in William Street, 220 William Street. He's the Mr. Bloom,
mm-hmm.
and Ben Bloom, he's a circulation manager. And I got it fixed up so you can get a job." Well, I got in there, they gave me the job, and I worked for the Hearst Papers.
Oh, that was for the Hearst Papers.
Well, there you are, and there was a salary, and I was a man already.
Mm-hmm.
And what did I do? I did the circulation promotion,
mm-hmm.
promoting the check-in newsstands, and talking to the wholesalers and see that the competition, there was a lot of competition in papers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked for the Hearst Papers and for the UN. So I was doing pretty good. So Mr. Annenberg, you must have heard the name Annenberg.
Yeah.
I get a call from the headquarters, from the general circulation manager of all the Hearst Papers and magazines, to come up and see them out there in West 40th Street. And this, where I worked, was down near the Brooklyn Bridge. I didn't know what they wanted to see me about, but I was a very naive person. And my hands started to sweat, and I was nervous, and I figured, I'm losing my job. I must have done something wrong. Anyhow, I go up there in West 40th Street near Times Square, and I didn't talk to Annenberg himself, but his son-in-law was there. He was the owner of the... And he said to me, "How would you like to be in business for yourself and write checks and be your own boss and all that?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they were doing, he winded up in jail later on. What they were doing is taking agencies away. In every town, there's a wholesaler, you know.
Right.
That distribute. I'm not too well. I'm going to the hospital Monday, 25th, next Monday.
Do you want to pause for a minute, get a drink?
No.
Want something
no.
cold to drink?
Anyhow, this man, I've got everything in here. See, it's
mm-hmm.
in there.
Uh-huh.
I got to get somebody to help me edit it. You see. Everything I'm telling you about is in there. This man says to me, "You'll be in business, but you gotta leave town." I says, "Where do I have to go?" He says, "Pittsfield, Mass." What this guy did, together with his father-in-law, and Mo Annenberg, Mo and Max Annenberg, two brothers, one was a Chicago one, and he was the head man of both the Good Housekeeping and all their papers and magazines,
mm-hmm.
and the Racing Form and everything. He you'd be in business for yourself. I says, you know, my name is Levine. I'm a Jimmy here for Jewish men don't want to be in business for himself.
Right.
I want to be. He said, why can't you leave town? I says, I'm single. I can go anytime. All I have to do, I have a furnished room, 17th Street. Get my things and okay. It took me to Pittsfield, Mass. And they took away the business from a goyman named Shea, who was making a living from it. Mm-hmm. It's not a big town, you know, the Berkshire Hills. Mm-hmm. And they took the business away from me, found an excuse, something's wrong. And they did the same thing. They did the same thing in 50 other cities. And from all these cities together, they collected hundreds of thousands of dollars. He says to me, this business I'm giving you is bringing in so much a month or a week, I don't know. I said, oh, you know, we want you to send us $40 each out of that money. Keep the rest out of that money. To made a check to the Cecilia Corporation. Mm-hmm. His mother's name was Celia. So. Mm-hmm. So every week I send a check. And I get the rest of the money. And I built up the business.
What was the business?
Huh?
What was the business?
Distribute papers and magazines, not only in Pittsfield, but the whole western Pennsylvania. Adams and North Adams and Great Barrington. I don't know if you're familiar with the Berkshires. Beautiful territory.
So, yeah. So what you're saying is that he put all these men out of business, drove them out?
Yeah, they came to Pittsfield. They came to Albany. Albany used to bring in maybe $5,000 a month profit, a big city. They take the, and the distributor owned it. But they didn't, so they take it away from the distributor and put on another distributor to share the expense with this guy. This guy who ended up in Leavenworth.
So that was illegal, what you're saying. What they were doing
This wasn't only illegal. Unethical. They didn't pay no taxes either. And they didn't pay no taxes, and the result was that that's it. But I sent no checks. Then came my time, and he was uncovered. They took it away from me, and I didn't know what to do with myself. That was 1927 already.
Mm-hmm. So they used you. They used you.
Oh, they used me, but I made some money.
Yeah, made some money.
So you were there, I'm sorry, till how long?
About a year and a half, 2 years.
Uh-huh.
1926 or so. And then, they told me, not to worry, we'll get you a job, we'll give you a job and all that. But I came to New York and I got a job at the New York Herald Tribune. I got my business card from the Herald Tribune laying right there. And I was employed in the circulation department.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the time when Hoffman and the Lindbergh baby, was Lindbergh
mm-hmm.
baby?
Yeah.
And there was...
Those people went to jail, or some of the people went to jail? One person? The people that got you involved in that scam?
I don't know. I'm not getting anywhere with you because I think, although maybe I am, I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know
you
what
are.
You want.
Don't worry about that.
I expected you to have forms, you see.
This is
all right,
exactly.
So I worked for the Herald Tribune, the circulation department.
Uh-huh.
And a woman owned it. She owned it, Mrs. Who's, what was that famous name? There was a woman that owned the Herald Tribune. I forgot her name just now. And the Herald Tribune was in competition with the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
When you went down to the East Side or to any Jewish neighborhood, the Herald Tribune was considered almost it's a combination already of two papers.
Uh-huh.
Papers started to fold up, you see. Herald and Tribune. Herald Tribune, they're still in business in Paris, but not in New York. And so... we had meetings with Mrs. The name is on my very famous name. And so they wanted suggestions. And I told them, why don't you do what the New York Times put down the arrival of buyers? People, hundreds of buyers come into New York every day from the department. department stores and from mm-hmm. and everything else. She opened her mouth and she says to me, "We don't want to make a cloak and suit paper out of this. This paper, you know, it's for colleges, for high schools. It was considered, you know, I mean, educational, the Herald Tribune. Mm-hmm. But the Times is still in business and the Herald Tribune is out.
Right.
So I worked for the Herald Tribune, and at that time, I think there was Charles Levine. There was all kind of exciting times. The Times, you know, that's a separate thing in itself of what went on, you mm-hmm. see. I forgot to tell you that when I worked for the Hearst paper, I used to go out mornings and put papers, go on a boat, and meet the big passenger ships that came from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And they would put down a hook and take the newspapers up to the boats and put it outside of each bed, a stateroom.
Mm-hmm.
So when they arrived from Europe, they had the morning news. And but I have it there. You see, if you would...
What is your... Do you have something written? Is that what you have?
No, I have something that's printed about me.
Oh, I see.
This is just for the archives. They're oral tapes. They're tapes for people, researchers, to listen to. They'll be indexed through with computers. So that's the kind of historical information...
Yeah, but when you're done with that, I want to show you a few things.
Oh, great.
Well, that was another experience, you know, getting up 4 o'clock in the morning, going on a boat out in the ocean,
uh-huh.
and meet a big liner like the, you know.
And you did that every day?
We had to do it every morning. And then I worked night turn for the other papers. And the stories about how I used to be searched at night. And
could you tell us some of this?
No, and I want to get back to Herald Tribune,
okay.
You see. Herald Tribune, and how did I get out of there? I don't know. I think I had a disagreement with somebody. And I'm not from the Herald Tribune. I think I went to work. There was a paper called PM. There was a paper called The Mirror. The Mirror, that's Harry's paper. And there was a World Telegram. Anyhow, it seemed like the graphic, the McFadden paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they all went out of business, one by one. The papers kept on, in Manhattan, in New York, there used to be 18 daily papers.
Mm-hmm.
I can't...
Was it competition that made them go out of business, or what?
The television, radio. The advertisers didn't want to have too much coverage, duplication of coverage.
Uh-huh.
And how did I ever get to? I had a ranch in Long Island with 36 kids and for the Brooklyn Times for a while. They were out of business too. And I ran that ranch in Olson Park and and then this guy, Van Gloom, from the Hearst papers, called me up one day and he says, called me all the way from Pittsburgh, New York, and he says, "I need you in Pittsburgh. I want you to come to Pittsburgh where there's about 7 or 8 papers and we're going to make 2 out of them." They made the Post-Gazette, I think. The Post Gazette was in business from before. But what did they do? They put, there used to be a Chronicle, the Sun, and the Chronicle, and the Telegraph, and the Dispatch here,
mm-hmm.
and the Press was here. And they combined it and they made the Post Gazette, and Hearst bought it out and gave it to a guy named Locke. And he owns papers in Ohio.
So Hearst sent you?
So they sent me in here
to
help him combine the papers.
Hearst papers.
Now when was
because
that?
Because it was 1932. But I must have skipped a lot in
that's
between.
All right. We'll go back.
In 32, and I'd been working until they closed up here too. The Sun Telegraph closed up.
When was that?
In 1961, in April 1961.
So you worked at the newspaper through 1961?
Yeah, I get a pension from them.
What did you do? Was it circulation or what did you do?
Well, circulation all the time, promotion this time. I didn't deliver papers, I didn't sell papers. I went to city agents in Greensburg and Blairsville and in Butler and Kittanning and Fort City, mm-hmm. New Kensington, all around the world. City agents, why? Because there was competition. There was the press and there was other papers. Now there's no competition at all.
No.
So they even... So they went out of business in 1961, and I didn't know what to do with myself. So I went over to the circulation, to the business manager of the Sun Telegraph. Uh-huh. You never sold that paper, did you?
No.
See, that's here from a different world.
I wasn't living in Pittsburgh.
Huh?
I wasn't living in Pittsburgh.
I wasn't. But
you wasn't where you come from.
I'm from Gary, Indiana.
Gary?
Indiana.
Right outside of Chicago.
Yeah. Indianapolis first.
Yeah, I've been all over the United States. Christmas. So, what happened? And now here, the other guys went around crying. They lost their jobs. Hundreds of guys lost their jobs.
Uh-huh.
But me, you know, I'm a little bit different. I've got the circulation manager of the Sun Telegraph, the paper, the Hearst paper. Was it a Hearst paper? I guess, I don't remember. And I says to him, look, you got so much money, Stanley got among all those dealers, and you quit them, went out of business suddenly, there's thousands of dollars there. Who's going to get it for you? So he says, what do you got in mind? I says, I want to take all the accounts and collect them for you. If they're a recent account, give me 20%. If it's 60 days old, 50, 30%. If it's very old, 50%. It's okay, it's a deal. We made a contract and I started making money, $1,500 a week, $2,000.
So you went to these firms, you went to these businesses.
And I collected what they owed. They were willing to pay, they didn't care.
Right.
They still handled the press, some of them. They still handled the New York papers and everything else. But what they owed the Sun Telegraph, they owed, they had to pay.
Right.
And so it lasted about 6 months and I made myself enough money to buy a house and do all kind of things.
That was creative of you to do that.
Huh?
That was very creative of you.
Yeah,
to
but then it came, it started to peter out, water out. Then it was getting too hard to get money, so I had to quit it.
Uh-huh.
But while I was doing this collecting, I learned a new trade, the collection business, you see. So I see an ad in the Pittsburgh Press, a little classified ad, collector wanted for hardcore delinquent accounts. So I sit down, and a box number, too. And I write a letter with a plain, ordinary pen, no resume, nothing. And I says, you need a man for bad accounts. I'm the man for you. I'll work for you for 2 weeks free. I want to prove to you what I can do. You don't have to pay me anything. And you need a man that's not a young man, because you got to go out on Sundays, you got to go out evenings, you got to go out Saturdays, and a young fellow wouldn't do it for you. I get a telephone call from New York, our man is coming in to Pittsburgh, and he wants to interview, see him, in the Century Building on 7th Avenue. And that was in 1961,
mm-hmm.
when the paper went out of business. Well, I come in the room where the guy is going to interview me, and I see about 15 or 20 other guys there. But I was already in the 60s, you know, in 61. I was 62 years old, and I got my gray hair for some other reasons that bothered me. I went through a lot, you see. I still cry when I think about it. So. He interviewed everybody, and me too, and he says, I'll let you know. I get home and I get a call from this guy. He says, you're hired. And it was a good pay too. It was about $600 a month, and commission too. You see, on the collections. It happened to be a fake business too. You know, where they sold freezers and food. Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear that record?
No.
Never heard that record.
Where they sell you food, like
they sell you a freezer, and they supply you with food.
Yeah, yeah.
And you sign papers, all kind of papers. Around the deal is about $1,800, $3,000. And the people get food delivered, but then the food they eat up, and then they don't have any money to pay for this. Anyhow, it can't exist. It's a record. And they went on the stock market, and they went, Jewish people from Newark, New Jersey. And they put me in the office, and I'm the manager of the office. And I kept on collecting money.
Uh-huh.
$3,000 a day, $5,000. I was good at it. I have a copy of the letter. Mm-hmm. They send out to everybody that Ezra Levine has got your account and he's going to contact you. I have all that proof, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the money again after the other guys that went around crying, had no jobs. And while I was doing this collecting, I had to do business with attorneys, because some people didn't want to pay. And so we made them. So I got business collection with the attorneys. Anyhow, this thing died out.
Mm-hmm.
It went broke, you see, and I was left with the office, with a typewriter, with the desks, with the dish, everything. I sold it and I cashed in. People ran away. Their name was Hirsch, their name. They called it, I have the name of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too bad I don't have it on the table. And so since they went out and I had connection with attorneys, I don't have it here, the checks to show you. The attorney said to me, hey, why don't you go out and serve a subpoena for us?
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, you'll make some money.
Serve a subpoena, yeah.
So I was serving subpoenas. It was in all kinds of cases. I was a witness serving on doctors, on
uh-huh.
malpractice cases.
Uh-huh.
I did it this week, last week. I served one subpoena.
Oh, you still do it?
$25, I get sometimes more.
What's involved and with that? You just go to their
so
house.
So one of the attorneys was a Jewish man, and he called me one day and he says, I want you to go to this place and pick up a gasoline credit card. I'll give you $5. And so his name was Evans, Sam Evans, A-V-I-N-S, he died. And so I take he gives me the assignment, I go out, I pick up the card, and instead of giving him the card, I'm sorry, something is happening to my head, that's my sickness.
Well, you know, it's almost time for us to stop.
No, wait a minute, I'll finish this and that's all. And I see that the company that gives him the work to pick up the cards is located in St. Louis, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the telephone number and I went into the house, and right in front of my wife, I says, I'm going to call St. Louis and tell them I'm available to do this work. And in daytime, St. Louis is pretty expensive. I talked about half an hour and I made a deal with him, took away the job, the work that a lawyer was getting for me.
Hmm.
And since 19, I don't know how long, I've been with that company picking up gasoline credit cards. They pay $45 for each card you pick up.
Really?
$45.
Do you remember the name of that company?
No, I don't remember.
Well,
I, still, I still do business with him.
Oh, you do still do business?
Yeah.
We're going to be at the end of this tape soon.
Yeah.
So
here.
We're going to come back when it's convenient for you.
Card recovery, Tim. See? $45 for recovery, $15 for a signed statement. And I have to go out and see this guy in Penn Avenue. No, Highland Avenue.
Well, you sound like you've been very busy. You always are able to land on your feet.
See, this isn't very old. This,
no, this is just recently.
Yeah. So
92.
Yeah, so now I occasionally get, I had a call from a lawyer by the name Harvey in the Park Building somewhere. He sent me out to deliver not a subpoena but a notice of suing.
Uh-huh.
And I made $25. I should charge you more, but being it, I'm an old man, so I don't charge him so much. But I have a little income enough for spending money and all that.
Well, you know what? Like Deborah says, we are almost at the end of the tape.
And we're only allowed to tape for an hour the first time.
Is
so
it going? Well, you
you've
see,
been talking for an hour.
What you've been trying to do is, not what I expected you to do. I expected you to have
certain questions. Well, we do have questions, but
this is all about review.
The first time we like to have just the person speak on whatever they want, and then we can get back to some other things that are of interest to us and to you that you might want to include. You might think about it for the next
time. That's Solomon. Solomon, that's.
Well, you know what?
We'll talk about your family and.
We have several, when we think about this, and we're going to sit down, have some questions, and we'll come back. Do you think we could set up another time now with you, Mr. Levine?
You can come.